Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer. We're going to talk some Ole Miss and MSU football for a little while. We're glad you've chosen to join us this morning. And a reminder, we're working on a podcast with this program, so eventually you'll be able to find this on your smartphones as well. We thank you for clicking in with us right now. Ole Miss on the road at Florida this weekend. Suddenly, it's a top 25 matchup. It didn't really look that way in the summer, but the Gators have gotten off to a good start. They're 4-0, 2-0. So are the Rebels. Ole Miss comes in at number three, while Florida comes in at number 25. These are AP top 25 rankings. Mississippi State back on the road. They're going to Texas A&M. We'll talk about that game a little bit and come back and catch the Rebels too. Logan, that game last year was kind of the one, I know we think of the LSU game as one that kind of started to build momentum for State, but it was that stretch of home games. Now the back-to-back wins against Texas A&M first and then Auburn, that really kind of catapulted them into the nation's consciousness, wasn't it?
It really was. And, you know, you look at, you know, State's win at LSU. They actually had a week off after they went against LSU to kind of ride that momentum from that first win and to kind of prove that that wasn't a fluke. Mississippi State came in and defeated Texas A&M and Auburn in back-to-back weeks, like you said, and that kind of catapulted them from, you know, they were unranked going into the LSU game. And, you know, 4 weeks later, after three wins against top 10 opponents, Mississippi State's number one in the country for the first time ever. So, you know, that kind of catapulted, you know, it kind of the Texas A&M win kind of proved that the LSU win wasn't a fluke, that Mississippi State was a contender last year. You know, looking at this year's matchup, it kind of did a little bit of the same thing, even though Mississippi State has the one loss already. State needs this win to kind of maintain where they're at and kind of move ahead in the rankings. Texas A&M is ranked 14th in the country, so a win over them would move Mississippi State up in the rankings, and it would also keep them alive in the SEC West. You know, this early in the season, it's hard to come back from two losses already early in the SEC slate. So State needs this win on the road just as badly as they needed that win on the road last week at Auburn. You know, they were able to win on the road in that game and kind of picked up their first conference win to even things up at 1-1. You know, they'd love to go 2-1 and kind of get back into the SEC race.
Ole Miss is coming off a lackluster win against Vanderbilt. I really thought that the Rebels would start slowly against Vanderbilt. I think that's to be expected a little bit when you're coming down off of the kind of win Ole Miss had in Tuscaloosa against then number two Alabama. So I expected a little bit of a slow start, but never did see the Rebels really climb out of that. They made some plays. They struggled in the red zone. Vanderbilt was a top 10 red zone defense going into that game, ranked number seven in that category. And Ole Miss struggled to execute down there. It wasn't all Vanderbilt, although Vanderbilt played well. The Rebels got into the red zone five times and only scored two touchdowns and one time did not score at all. But ultimately, Vanderbilt wasn't able to move the ball against Ole Miss enough to score, enough to really, you know, really threaten in the game. I know they got the one touchdown there, but you never felt like Vanderbilt was fixing to punch in, you know, enough points to win, especially after Ole Miss went up by 11 and the clock started running out in the fourth quarter. Red zone was an issue for Ole Miss against Vanderbilt, but again, some of that was self-inflicted. A lot of penalties for Ole Miss, 11 in the game, much more than we have seen from this team. So, you know, they got the win. Vanderbilt is improved. We saw that from how the Commodores matched up with Georgia when Georgia visited Nashville earlier in the year. But it leaves a little, a little wanting, I guess, if you're an Ole Miss fan. You want to see the Rebels come out and play cleaner and more efficient against Florida, and I think they will. Logan, looking at State and Auburn a little bit, you know, Auburn held without a touchdown for the first time under Gus Malzahn. What's State doing defensively to have success right now?
Well, they're allowing a lot of yards. They're actually, from, 20 to 20, teams are picking up yardage and moving the chains quite a bit on Mississippi State. It's when Mississippi State gets in the red zone that they're really turning things up. It's amazing, you know, just how they flip the switch and kind of batten the hatches down in the red zone and on the goal line. It's pretty amazing what they've done down there. And they've been able to get off the field on third downs as well. I think they're leading the conference right now in third down defense. And that's one of the things that Manny Diaz has preached, you know, that kind of bend but don't break defense. And yeah, although it's kind of scary to watch sometimes if you're a Mississippi State fan with teams picking up yardage kind of at ease, they're not scoring on Mississippi State. So that's a good advantage of that. You know, it's giving their offense a little bit of a break, you know, during the game. But, you know, I don't know if you want to do the whole bend but don't break defense this week against Texas A&M, because that's an offense that could put up a whole lot of points. A lot of, you know, high scoring offenses. You know, Mississippi State's very familiar with Kevin Sumlin, having faced him twice while he was at Houston. And then, of course, the three previous games at Texas A&M as well. So, you know, the defense is played well. They've missed a lot of tackles in these first four games. And that's one of the things I asked, you know, Dan Mullen and Manny Diaz about this week, was if that was a concern. And both of them have said, you know, a lot of those missed tackles have came early in games. It seems like the defense kind of settles in as the game goes on and they're able to make those tackles. So, you know, we'll have to see if that continues, if the tackling improves. I know there's a lot of young players on that defense still trying to kind of, I guess, get a little seasoning as the season goes on. So we'll have to see if they can tackle a little bit better. I've seen the tackling improve as the game goes on, but it seems like early in games, I don't know if it's jitters or nerves or just kind of settling into those games, they haven't been able to get those guys on the ground early on.
Well, you mentioned the red zone defense for State, and that's something we're seeing more and more, is how teams clamp down when opponents get inside the 20. Ole Miss has got to play better there. They've been fortunate against Vanderbilt a couple of times and against Alabama to finish some drives with touchdowns, but it hasn't been very clean. It hasn't looked good. And while that's not important, that look does indicate that, hey, you know what, you've got some things to work on here. And Hugh Freeze talked about that earlier in the week. There was a drive that they ultimately finished with a touchdown against Vanderbilt, finished with Robert Kimdichie just bullying in from about a yard away. And when he finally scored on that play, I mean, he really scored. Like he ran like 3 yards into the end zone. So one of those kind of short runs. But on that sequence there, Ole Miss snapped the ball from inside the two like 5 times. You know, they got a reset there with a Vanderbilt penalty. And, you know, you just got to be better there. They've got to find something that's going to work a little more consistently, something they can rely on. And, you know, and to Freeze's credit, he got down there. He was trying different things. You know, we saw Jalen Walton as the Wildcat quarterback. We saw Jeremy Liggins take a snap. You know, we saw some power runs. You know, we saw Freeze try to go wide with Jordan Wilkins, and it looked like he had scored until replays showed that he stepped out of bounds. So if they're focusing on red zone offense and trying to get better execution there this week. Looking at Florida, Logan, again, this is a transitioning team, a rebuilding team. You don't often go into this matchup, whether it's Ole Miss or Mississippi State, and say, hey, this team has more talent than Florida. But that's where Ole Miss is right now. You know, Florida's a talent-rich state with high school football. Lots of teams go down there and sign kids, including State and Ole Miss. But I look at this game right now, and I see Ole Miss better at quarterback, better at wide receiver. The offensive line's probably a wash. You know, neither of them are outstanding right now in this game. Ole Miss is deeper at running back. Ole Miss is going to be deeper along the defensive line. Florida's pretty good on defense, too, and it's going to be an interesting matchup there when we look at Laquon Treadwell, the wide receiver for Ole Miss, against Florida cornerback Vernon Hargraves. And there's been a lot of talk about that matchup going into this game. You know, two really elite players, both of them projected as first-round draft picks. Both of them underclassmen right now, juniors, both of them projected as first-round picks next spring in the NFL draft. They have a little bit of a history. They faced one another in the Under Armour All-Star game. Neither of them had much to say. In fact, I don't think Vernon Hargraves had anything to say. I don't think he spoke at all to Florida beat writers this week. But Treadwell talked about that game, said, hey, I made some plays. He made some plays. And basically, I think that's what will happen in the game. I think Treadwell will make a few plays, and so will Hargraves. And, of course, they'll move Treadwell around, but it'll be interesting to see if Florida moves Hargraves around, if he shadows Treadwell or if he kind of hangs on one side. But the thing here is I think Ole Miss has weapons at wide receiver, okay? You know, if they're really intent on taking Treadwell out of the game, you can limit him. but that's going to create some other opportunities. And the big opportunity I see here, Logan, in this game is going to be at tight end. Freeze has been more intent on throwing to tight end Evan Engram the last couple of games. You know, didn't see Engram much in the first game, so they were throwing downfield quite a bit and scoring fast. Chad Kelly finding receivers on long routes, primarily Quincy Adebojo and Cody Core. Florida's missing a linebacker in this game, an outside linebacker, Alex I don't have the name in front of me. Anzalone, I think it's, you know, that's it. But they're missing their best cover linebacker, and that could create some opportunities for Engram there in the middle.
Yeah, and some of the things that I'm looking at in the Texas A&M Mississippi State game, believe it or not, I'm looking at Texas A&M's defense, and not in a negative way. They're leading the conference right now in sacks. I think they have 17 sacks, I think, already this year. And, you know, Miles Garrett, you know, was unbelievable as a true freshman last year playing defensive end for the Aggies. Set the SEC single season record for freshmen with sacks, and he already has 6.5 already this year, you know, through four games. So that's pretty impressive what he's been able to do. And, you know, just they're starting two defensive ends alone already have 10.5 sacks. So Mississippi State's tackles, Rufus Warren and Justin Senior, are going to have to play their best game so far this year. You know, it's kind of been hit and miss with those guys so far this season, kind of mixed reviews, especially at left tackle with Rufus Warren. So, you know, I don't know if how much Mississippi State gets Elkton Jenkins involved. We've seen him play early on in ball games the last couple of weeks. Mississippi State's very high on the redshirt freshman from Clarksdale. So they're going to probably get him in the mix some, rest Rufus Warren a little bit in that game, try to keep those two guys as fresh as possible to go against Miles Garrett in that ball game to try to, you know, protect Dak Prescott, because right now Mississippi State's running game's not – really clicking. You know, they really are only averaging, I think Ashton Shepard's averaging, you know, him and Brandon Holloway combined and Dak Prescott are all averaging less than 30 or a little over 30 yards a game, somewhere in there. So they're not generating a whole lot on the ground, especially in conference play. In the two conference games, they're averaging less than 50 yards a game on the ground. So Mississippi State's got to get things going in their running game to kind of keep those defensive ends from pinning their ears back and rushing the passer every single play. Now, Mississippi State's had a lot of success through the air. They've thrown a lot of quick passes. Dak Prescott's been very, very effective since that fourth quarter against LSU. So I imagine that's going to continue. That's the strength of Mississippi State's team right now, is the quarterback and wide receiver relationship. We've seen Gus Wally have a few big games at tight end for Mississippi State. So I think that will continue. That's kind of their strength. So Mississippi State's not going to shy away from that. But they're going to have to get the ground game going just a little bit to kind of ease that pass rush from Texas A&M. That's kind of one of the matchups that I'm looking at. And then the other one is Texas A&M's wide receivers. We all know what they've got. You know, they've got some big wide receivers out there on the edge. And then they've got some little scat back type of guys in the slot there that have been very effective. They're going to go 4 and 5 wide most of their plays with Kyle Allen at quarterback. And they're going to try to throw the ball downfield. They're going to try to dink and dunk you down for a few plays, and then they're going to take a deep shot. So Mississippi State's cornerbacks are going to be on an island a lot of that game, a lot of one-on-one coverage. May have some safety help over the top. Maybe they don't. And, you know, they're going to have to do a good job of communicating, make sure that they don't have any busted coverages that lead to some big plays.
How much is A&M playing Kyler Murray right now?
Not a whole lot, it doesn't seem like. I mean, he's playing some here and there. Obviously, he's very, very talented. I mean, I think they've signed the number one quarterback in the country the last 2 years. So there's a lot of talent at quarterback there. And, you know, there's only one ball to go between them. So, you know, right now, Allen's the guy. And he didn't play much against Mississippi State last year. It was Kenny Hill was the quarterback when Mississippi State beat him here in Starkville. So it's a much different A&M team than what Mississippi State faced a year ago.
Yeah, it was really Mississippi that was kind of the beginning of the end for Kenny Hill there, man. He struggled against State, and he struggled against Ole Miss, and next thing you know, he transfers out of the program. So, you know, it is a very good Texas A&M offense, so they'll be coming to Oxford later this year. I want to see what Ole Miss can do offensively against Florida. Very good defense. I want to see if Chad Kelly can kind of, you know, find his game again. I mean, we keep talking about an off game for Chad Kelly against Vanderbilt, and it was in the sense that he completed only 57%. Now, that's about 10 points under where he'd been the first three games. He threw those two interceptions, Logan. Before then, you know, I was thinking that he really hadn't thrown one. I'm sure he had one on his record, but it was a ball that was like right in the hands of Laquon Treadwell in the season opener. Treadwell's first game back, a little rusty and whatnot. That's how he looked. Ball bounces off of Treadwell's hands. A defender's right there to grab it. But Kelly threw two against Vanderbilt and, you know, made a few questionable decisions. And that's something that that Ole Miss fans are, frankly, were familiar with under Bo Wallace, a three-year starter there. Wallace did so many good things for Ole Miss and led the Rebels to a lot of wins. And, you know, I believe that Ole Miss football would not be where it is right now had Bo Wallace signed somewhere else because of the state of the program when he arrived with Hugh Freeze in 2012. But Wallace, even as a senior, would sometimes, you know, have issues with decision-making, and sometimes that led to turnovers. Saw a little bit of that from Chad Kelly against Vanderbilt. But even, you know, in an off game, he throws for 320 yards. So, I mean, that's the kind of talent that they have there. I do expect to see Ole Miss overall on offense play a little cleaner, play a little more efficient against Florida. I don't think we're talking about any kind of Alabama hangover. I think the focus is going to be there. I think you're going to see more energy. And look, Ole Miss has already gone on the road and won at arguably the most difficult SEC venue at Alabama with 102,000 Crimson folks there. You know, if you can win there, then you can manage that silent count. You can do the things you need to do in any difficult environment. It'll be that. Ole Miss has had success in Gainesville the last two trips there winning, but it's not like anything's been easy about those games. Of course, the last one in 2008, Florida was ranked number four and, you know, could never put the Rebels away. Ole Miss had a big second half. Next thing you know, it's, you know, 31-30 and it's fourth and one. And Tim Tebow's thinking that he got that yard, but he didn't. He really wasn't even close. Marcus Temple making initial contact and just slowing up Tebow just enough on that play in 2008. And then the rest of the defense just collapsed. And that was a big win for a rebuilding Ole Miss team at that time. You know, roles are kind of reversed now. Ole Miss is going to Florida as the favorite. It's the Gators that are rebuilding. And we've heard this nobody respects us theme coming out of Gainesville this week. Jim McElwain making comments in his press conference along the lines of a team that probably comes in here and expects to beat the heck out of us. And, you know, you heard a little bit of some similar things from Florida players during the week. So, you know, Florida trying to be that us against the world thing, it sounds like, with Ole Miss coming in. So we'll see. I don't expect it to be an easy game for either team. I think it'll be close. But I think Ole Miss will make enough plays in the end to win. Logan, I got them 27-26 on the blog.
Yeah, and you know, mentioned earlier about Chad Kelly's interceptions. That's one thing we haven't seen from Dak Prescott or Mississippi State's quarterbacks this year. No interceptions on the year. Dak Prescott's thrown 191 straight passes in the last 17 quarters and no interceptions to be thought of. And that's one of the things he worked on in the offseason. He kind of stared down some receivers too long last year, in which led to several interceptions, especially early on in the season. And he wanted to cut down on those mistakes. He only has one turnover on the year. One of the Northwestern State guys stripped the ball away from him. I thought the play was over and that Dak was down. You know, I guess it was kind of later in that game. And, you know, it kind of – the game was already approached. I guess the referees thought they'd give Northwestern State a little bit of a favor there. And I think that's the only time Mississippi State hasn't scored in the red zone was on that play when the ball stripped away from Dak Prescott. So they've been pretty efficient in the red zone, haven't turned the ball over very much this year. So, you know, Mississippi State's going to have to continue that, can't afford any turnovers, especially in a game that I expect to be a shootout this weekend. I think it's going to be a lot like the last time they visited College Station in 2013 when it was 51-41. They just couldn't outshoot Johnny Manziel and the Aggies that day, even though Dak Prescott tried his best. Dak goes down on Mississippi State's last drive, hurts his elbow, misses the next couple of games. So Dak's kind of wanting to rebound from that ball game. That was a tough ball game for Dak. It was a couple of days after his mother had passed away, came back in and played pretty well in that ball game against the Aggies before getting hurt on that final drive. Tyler Russell had to come in and finish that ball game out for Dak. But, you know, it's another game. I think it's going to be a close shootout. I like the Aggies at home just because, you know, they're undefeated right there. They've got a larger stadium now. It's up over 100,000 people. It'll probably be the largest crowd Mississippi State's ever played in front of. So it's going to be a hostile home environment there for the Aggies, and I expect it to be a shootout, you know. And if Texas A&M turns the ball over a couple of times, Mississippi State can capitalize on that, then Mississippi State has a chance to win that ball game. It may come down to a situation where whoever gets the ball last wins that ball game, but I expect it to be a high-scoring game. And Parrish, you know, in those high-scoring games, they also take a long time too, especially when TV's involved too. So with it being a late kickoff, you know, my fingers will be feverishly writing to try to get everything in before deadline.
Yeah, you want to mention to John Pitts, Logan. You're preaching to the choir here, man. I understand night games and high-scoring games. Make sure John understands that when you're trying to get that last sidebar in the system there. You mentioned Dak's red zone turnover against Northwestern. You got to watch the Demons, man. They're tricky. Tell me about Vic the Demon from that game, man. Did Vic the Demon and Bully get in a fight? You know, I have this soft spot in my heart for the directional schools in Louisiana, and I remember the fight between Vic the Demon and Chief Brave Spirit there at Northeast Louisiana.
Yeah, he kind of stayed over there to his own. You know, that game got out of hand pretty early on. So I didn't see a whole lot of interaction between him and Bully during that ball game, but yeah, well, I know the Revelé dog and the Yale leaders at Texas A&M and stuff. It was pretty impressive when I went there for the first time 2 years ago. They've got a great home environment there, so I don't know if Bully can counteract all that 12th man spirit. I want to see if the stadium still sways with all the renovations that they've done there.
You know what? I've heard two things on the stadium thing there. You know, and folks, what we're talking about is for years when the Texas A&M fans would interlock and sway back and forth, the press box at old Kyle Field would sway a little bit. And it could be a little bit unnerving for the first time. I experienced that, Logan, all the way back in 1985 when I was covering for the student newspaper at Northeast Louisiana and covering the Indians against Jackie Sherrill's Texas A&M team. I experienced that swaying press box then. And again, last year when Ole Miss played there, it is a difficult venue. But I tell you what, the way to get those big road wins and take the crowd out of it is to score early. Ole Miss had early success there at A&M last year, early success at Alabama a couple of weeks ago, and it will help them if they get off to a good start against Florida down in the swamp. Hey, folks, that's it for this week. We're glad you chose to join us. Come back. We'll be here next week at 11.